Go.
You cut me off sometimes when I have more. Like, you don't you see it? I have more?
Aren't you done?
Season 3, baby.
Welcome to the Sibling Sit Down, where brother and sister talk about the beloved New Jersey Mafia hit TV show, The Sopranos. I'm Sarah Stefanelli.
And I'm Joseph Stefanelli. We're going to be taking you through The Sopranos one episode at a time, one podcast episode at a time.
Season 3!
Season 3, baby! Welcome back, everyone. We hope you missed us.
We will be discussing Season 3, Episode 1, Mr. Roger... Mr.
Ruggiero's neighborhood.
Ruggiero's neighborhood. Mr. Ruggiero's neighborhood. Okay. What's your summary?
Season 3, Episode 1. Having been listening to Tony's phone calls for years and coming up with nothing, the FBI decides to try bugging the Sausage Factory, commonly known as the Soprano Home. Meanwhile, Meadow is adjusting to her new life and roommate at Columbia University. Though introduced quickly in the finale of Season 2, Patsy Parisi, twin brother of Spoons Parisi, is working for Tony full-time now, but can't help suspecting that Tony was behind the hit on his twin brother. This episode aired on March 4th, 2001.
Do you like this episode?
I do. I do. I think more than you do.
I didn't dislike it. It was cute.
I think the issue with this episode is it does nothing for Tony and the mom. I mean, literally nothing happens. There's no progress in their characters. We're just introduced to them and in a very boring way.
Not true. Patsy Parisi has a whole storyline.
But, and what happens? Nothing. You know?
He pees in the pool.
He pees in the pool, which he will then swim in because Tony invites him over to go swimming in the pool.
Yes, he does.
No, but this is an FBI drama.
This is, yeah. Yeah.
You know, David Chase made it very clear that his goal when he created this show was to not do a procedural crime story. He didn't want to do Law and Order. He didn't want to do Criminal Minds. But, you know, he got, I guess he had some fun and he said, let's do one. Let's show them what The Sopranos would be as a procedural crime drama. And that's what it is. But, you know, I love the meta shit. And he gets really into it and he comments on it. He makes fun of it. And, you know, the use of the music is kind of awful, but fun. And
it's corny. And
so corny. And no, I think it's a lot of fun. What's really probably the most interesting thing about this episode, it is the only one in the history of the show that premiered as part of a two episode premiere. Episode 1, season 1 and 2 both premiered on March 4th, 2001.
You're kidding.
Yes, and I'm not going to say why, but we will talk about it. I would be spoiling a major thing if I said why, but we will definitely talk about it in our next episode.
Wait, so this was Sunday night at 9 and Sunday night at 10?
I believe so, yes.
Wow.
Either 8 and 9. I'm going to think 9 and 10. I don't think they would ever show this at 8.
But wow. That's a doozy.
And I think it's a really good episode to do that with, because I think if this was left alone as a season premiere, it would be the worst season premiere of the series.
I'm not crazy to think this was okay.
No, but when it became a part of basically a movie night, because it was 2 hours.
Got it.
And what happens in episode 2, which could very easily be the season premiere. If you told me that episode 2 was the season premiere, it might be one of the best season premieres of the show. So it really worked to do it this way.
I love it. I love it. So what was your favorite scene of this episode?
My favorite scene is the opening scene with the FBI, which is incredibly procedural and it has none of our mafia characters in it. But I just loved the tone it set. I loved watching them talk about the characters through what they're seeing. And I loved watching them and hating them. Like, these are the good guys. And I'm like, leave Tony alone.
Right.
You know, and I just love they're morons. You know, like,
yeah, they get a lot wrong.
They get so much wrong. Like, Olivia testifying against Tony. What woman would testify against her own son? I mean, she tried to kill him. So they really don't
care. Corey knows that, though. You could tell.
Yes. You know, and Richie definitely got whacked by the cartel. Like, oh my God, you have no idea. No, he did not. So that's and the two interesting things about that. First of all, it, again, this meta level, it reminded me of a writer's room. Like, I felt like it was David Chase saying, this is what it is when a bunch of writers get together to write the show. They spitball ideas about how to do it, even to the token woman. You know, there's a terrible, probably true stereotype that most writers' rooms in dramas and comedies are all men, and there's one woman.
At least in 2001.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, Tina Fey often speaks about the fact that she was the one woman in the SNL writers' room, you know, and then she became the head writer. So bravo to her.
Yeah, she rocks.
The fact that there was that one woman really brought that home.
That is interesting. My favorite scene was Patsy explaining that it was his birthday. It is so uncomfortable. And the fact that Christopher's the one that's like, hey, like, we could talk about spoons. Will that make you feel better? And Tony's just sitting there like, shut the tongue. And he's trying to change the subject. And it's, what's the guy's name who actually killed Spoons? What's his name? Gigi. And his face. And he feels horrible. And I guess, like, you assume Christopher knows, but he really, there's no reason for him to know. So why tell someone who needs to know, right?
No, I think secrecy is a big thing here. And in fact, the only one that clearly knows in that room is Paulie.
Yeah.
Who, if you remember, he's the one that drives Gigi to the airport to pretend like Spoons has to pick him up.
But okay, so that makes sense. So they're the only people who know. Like, why tell Christopher, who really doesn't need to know?
Right.
And it's just interesting to see the interworkings of how they deal. I mean, with murder, the less people who know, the better, right?
And
but
what's
it's
great
just
is
sad.
I,
it's so sad. You feel wrong.
But isn't that a great Furio line? Where, which one you the identical or the other one?
Or the other one? And he was identical.
Isn't it interesting though? You and I picked parallel scenes. Because yes. I picked the table scene, and you picked the table scene just differently.
That's why I was laughing when I was saying it, because it's definitely parallel.
In my favorite scene, we learned something that I don't think we knew, that Mikey Palmisi was Consigliere. Because on the chart where, like, they have, which I love that chart with all their pictures and the labels, it's blurred in the background, but it says Mikey Consigliere.
Okay, but we just talked about how they had everything wrong, so I don't know if we could take that as...
Oh, that's a good point. That's a very good point. But was he, though? Was he Junior's Consigliere?
I hope not. God in heaven, I hope not.
It's an interesting question, simply because, really, I guess Tony should have been his Consigliere. But because there was such strain between them... Who else would it be? It would have to be Mikey.
Mikey's just an idiot. Like, I hope he wasn't the one giving Junior advice. I mean, I guess he was. I guess he was. Ugh. Yeah. Okay. It's a good call. It's a good catch, though, to see that. I didn't notice that in the pictures. That's cool.
That was my first time I ever caught it. It was for my study of today. So
cool. Love that.
What's your favorite quote?
Baby Bing headed your way. All of their names. What is it? Princess Bing is Meadow, Mrs. Bing and Bada Bing and Baby Bing.
Yes, but I think the Sausage Factory
is also a great call out during your intro. That it all of it, it's like, well done, FBI. You didn't know who killed Richie, but you made up really good code names for the family. Another honorable mention for me is when Polly says it?
Yes.
He says, I need to watch TV to know about the world. Yeah. I thought that was an interesting line. And like kind of real.
And meta. That line is also meta because he's saying, like, we know this show. This episode is the easiest one to predict because it is basically an episode of Law and Order. Mm-hmm. We've watched these shows for years, since the 70s, if you go by Peter Gunn's theme, which is used. He says, I need to watch TV to know this shit because we know this shit. It's so fucking awesome.
It's good. And wait, I want to touch upon this Peter Gunn thing. So okay. The song, it's that typical spy song.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never heard of Peter Gunn before in my life. So why do I, everyone knows that spy song, but not the show. Isn't that odd?
It's probably a theme song that outlived the show. I would say that and Mission Impossible are the two, like, if you wanted to pretend you're a spy, that's what you play hum those. In your head. Yeah.
Yeah. Like yeah. If you're stepping over lasers, like trying to yes. get to like a vault, that's what you hum in your head.
Yeah.
Your favorite quote?
Log off. That cookie shit makes me nervous. But it's funny. And it's also, but you should be nervous. Like, it's actually one of the smartest lines Tony ever said, because the truth is they are about to listen to you. Well, it's just not through your fucking cookies.
Well, yeah, that he does. He has the right idea. He is. So the FBI even says that he, what do they call him? Like electronically diligent or something? What
something,
do they call
yeah.
him? And he is clearly. He's demonstrating that when he says that.
Tony's very careful. I mean, he's really careful.
Now, I don't know if that laptop in 2001 had a camera in it. I doubt it.
Mm-mm. No way.
I have a cover, though, for my camera.
Do you?
Yeah. Cookie shit makes me nervous.
Let's dive into our theme, and then I'm going to tell you why our structure, which I usually love, really fucked up my analysis of this episode.
Okay, that is fine. I also, like, don't know if there's a theme, but
there's a theme.
Cool. It all just made me even more paranoid about the government than I usually am. Just why? How? Please explain to me why the FBI had got the right to go into their home and bug it. I think that is wild.
Yeah, but the judge is very like, you, it has to be, you only can go into that room, you have to do this, and that's it.
Fine, but still.
Suspicion. There's some kind of he's a suspected criminal. I mean, you know.
Okay.
I think it's very interesting that this is March of 2001. There's a lot actually that's very interesting because this is the first episode of 2001, and yet September 11th has not happened yet. But there's a lot of stuff that's like, ooh, Chase knows things about like privacy. He mentions terrorism. Like, remember he says, I'll put the maid's boyfriend's name through anti-terrorism. Yeah, like,
that was a weird comment, too.
Yeah, but it's almost like, God, Chase, you're predicting these things. I mean, if that was said in November of 2001, that would completely be normal. Even the idea of what you're saying, no one would question it because that's what we're doing. I mean, the whole Patriot Act was a big debate then about, is our privacy worth our safety? But he's doing it in March. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good point. So what is the theme then? Or why do you have a problem with our structure? What the fuck?
Well, because I think there's two things to talk about in this episode. And the first one is I've already started. It was the idea of it's a procedural. And there's a lot of symbolism and a lot of meta evidence of that this is a procedural and the fact that it's mocking its own form.
Okay.
But that's not really a theme. You're right. That's exactly what the theme is, but you limit it to the government, which I think you're thinking too small. The theme is that every one of us is voyeuristic one way or another.
Okay.
And again, that's even meta because we've enjoyed watching this show for two seasons. You've enjoyed watching the inner workings of a monster and his crew in And I think voyeuristic, I think a lot of people think that that's a sexual term. It's not. It's anytime you want to watch something you're not supposed to be watching. And that's why that song, which is a God Love the Police, that's an awful song.
Awful song.
I'll Be Watching You.
I hate that song.
Every smile you fake, every claim you stick, I'll be watching you.
But again, I keep going back to those NBC dramas. On an NBC drama, that's the typical song they would use if the FBI was chasing a bad guy.
You have to spoon feed the audience what's going on.
Spoons.
So that song.
Like spoons.
Ooh, so tied. Meta. So meta.
So tied.
Is this a motif?
Just a few examples of the voyeurism. I mean, the FBI guy going through their refrigerator and then their mail, even right after the judge clearly told him that's not what they're allowed to do. The tennis instructor leaves because his wife has a .com job, which, I mean, is the fear that the internet is watching us, you know, or often that's how we watch things that we're not supposed to watch.
That didn't age well.
No, it really did.
She got a .com job. I was like, ooh, okay.
What job isn't?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so she's got a job. That's good. And the .com job would not make you move.
Right. You know, and Chase takes advantage of little moments like when the female agent is outside Meadow's room and the hot college guy opens up and he's only wearing a towel, which was,
ew,
we'll get
not
to that.
Hot.
Okay, well, I think he was supposed to be.
Ew, no, was he? I don't think so. I think he was supposed to be a creep.
Well, whatever. But he was watching her. He was watching her just because she was an attractive woman. Caitlin's story about the guy at the bus feeling invaded and everyone was watching. But the ultimate, and this is where I think it is kind of commenting on voyeurism as a sexual thing, those tennis scenes are like a cliche of a male watching lesbians on the internet. What they're wearing, the hardness on the nipples and the, it was ridiculous. And them bending over and watching, and the fact that Adriana isn't getting involved with this woman, even though she's clearly not attracted to her, but the other woman is. And it's almost like this odd threesome between the three of them. And Carmela's being ignored and is annoyed by the fact she's ignored. And these men are sexualizing them so much. And it's ridiculous. It's almost comical. But that's just another example of voyeurism. And this show just takes all these different versions of it and puts it beautifully in this episode.
Nice. Well done.
But eventually, though, here's the second theme.
Okay. Oh, you got two? I got none. Well, you got two?
Because that's the FBI's theme. The Sopranos theme is the fucking regularness of life, which is a common theme of this season.
Right, that's just a common theme, right?
Pauly being a germaphobe. Carmela saying her home is traditional in her snotty-ass little way. The water heater blowing up. Get the pictures. Like, that's normal.
Did you notice the prom picture?
I didn't.
When he says all the prom, it's Carmela. I assume with Tony, but
yes.
It's very clearly Carmela. Did they call that actress for The Many Saints of Newark, though? Because it looked exactly like Carmela. Like, they all just look like Carmela. It's insane.
Oh, wow. That's funny. I didn't look that closely, but I do know they went to the prom together. That's mentioned at some point.
Okay, then it was them.
That exercise scene at the end is so boring.
Yeah, they're listening but to the point.
But again, and this is, you're going to make fun of me. One of her last lines, well, he talks about his shitting habits, how the coffee cleared him out. And she says, you need more roughage. She's literally saying you should be regular because it's about the regularness of life. Boom.
Well done. Bada bing.
Bada bing. Season three, baby.
That was good. All right. Oh, symbolism.
You go first. I've talked a lot. I need a break.
I got a bit.
You do. You have a bit. I have to do all mine together because mine all goes together. So I don't want to do back and forth.
And God forbid we mess you up. You didn't tell me why you hated our structure.
Because here's where I fixed it. The symbolism, there's symbolism about the theme, like all the stuff I mentioned, but then there's symbolism about the procedural meta stuff. So I'm going to kind of talk about that in the next scene.
Okay.
I love our structure, and our listeners love our structure.
It sounds like you fixed it.
Our listeners need to hear all this bullshit.
Yeah,
so they can either agree or roll their eyes. And I'm here for you, baby.
And hey, listen, the feedback is that most people agree with me, like often.
What the fuck feedback are you listening to? Who do you?
What for feedback?
What feedback?
All right, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Lipari says Tony feels parabolics by the pool. He means he is suspicious of a type of microphone. But is this really the parable of Tony with a duck family by the pool? It's parabolic.
You're right.
Were you proud of me or are you laughing because it's wild?
A little of both.
I'll take it. I'll take it. There's a little like nod to Tony fading into AJ when AJ's leaving the house at the end of the driveway.
Yes.
Just like an interesting suggestion there.
Uh-huh.
I felt Harris was way too high up to be the one stalking outside the house. And then Tony, it cuts right to him singing.
I don't wanna do your dirty work no more. I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh yeah.
Which is interesting because I felt like he was doing the dirty work when I see Harris as like kind of higher up than that. And I did have that thought before the song started playing.
Yeah, I agree.
They are concerned about Patsy's alcohol abuse, and Gigi is drinking a beer. And we know it's the morning because the FBI says it. They say, oh, he got up early, and they walk in with Dunkin' Donuts. And so a little bit of hypocrisy there. So we said this a little bit, but Patsy is peeing in the pool, and it's a symbol of him peeing on Tony's family.
Mm.
The ducks. They're home. Right?
Right.
But also the parable. Got it? Okay. But also it's a whole like
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
You got it?
But yeah, my neck hurts from nodding so much.
Yeah. But also, it's kind of a, like, don't shit where you eat type thing, because then Tony invites Patsy and his son to come over and swim in the pool.
Yes. And Patsy's face is priceless.
Amazing. I really like him. I get why they brought him back and did the twin thing.
I agree.
When the FBI agent is in the hallway listening in on Meadow, I think this is a stretch. I'll be the first to admit it. But there's something weird about the London Heathrow sign. They show it, I think, 2 or 3 times where she's just staring at it. So I'm thinking, why are we showing London, the Brits, the Polish people are learning about American history to be citizens? Is this the rights of citizens not being honored because the FBI is on the family? And I think that was a little nod to being, you know, our American ways of get out of my face. And that is that.
You're absolutely right. That was really, that was.
There's someone out there going, hell yeah, Sarah. That's exactly what that was.
Does your arm hurt from reaching that far?
Shut up. All right, tell me why this procedural shit's all symbolic. Go for it.
No, it's just, you know, it goes from being a procedural and then commenting on it and then eventually like even mocking it. You know, the transitions were all fade to black, and there were just enough that basically that's where commercial breaks would go.
Yes.
And then, of course, there are no commercials. Thank God HBO don't have commercials. The constant looking at watches, which I believe is Harris only. There was this constant feel of we're just about to do it. We're going to do it. We're going to do it, which is just like the last 15 minutes of Law and Order. You know, are we going to get him? You know, and just the fact that it's a POV of the FBI. and not the criminals. I mean, this is the episode, really, let's face it, nothing happens to Tony. Even, you know, it's an anticlimactic. I mean, it's not like Patsy really does anything. He never finds out about Patsy. You don't need Tony and the Mafia for this episode.
Yeah, it's the FBI story.
I actually think it would be really interesting, forgive me for criticizing you, David Chase, if you had made this an episode where Tony and the mob had no lines and really just made it them.
Interesting.
I think that would have been really, but I think for a season premiere and people love the show so much, people would have been pissed. But I think it's one of those, that would have been an episode that everyone would hate it. But today we would have looked back and go, fucking brilliant. If they did a show where they had no lines and it was just, it was just the FBI. I thought that would have been really great. Again, this is procedural, but not of a cop show, but of a typical sitcom. The neighbor, like, you know, what is the neighbor going to say? And I really got this like Munster Adams Family feel, but they're a little different. Like, you know, like they cut the dolls off their heads and they, you know, like that's how they would describe the Adams Family. The heads off their dolls. You know what I was fucking talking about. The use of the Peter Gunn theme. We talked about you know, Paulie on the TV, but the ultimate one is the B-roll of Quantico, where they actually write it underneath. And it's so amazing that Criminal Minds will not premiere for 4 more years. And that exact shot.
What are you talking about, the B-roll of Quantico? What are you talking about?
When they were doing the lamp bullshit. They show that they're doing this in Quantico, where the FBI trains and the main headquarters in Virginia of the FBI. And they show it. They show a B-roll of it, which it's like Chase didn't film that. They found
I didn't even notice that.
But the worst part is that not only that, but they actually write underneath it Quantico, I think it's Virginia, whatever it is. Now, Criminal Minds 4 years later will do that every episode. We'll show that exact shot.
Sure. I don't even remember. I must have looked down at my notes at this point. I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's unbelievable that happened. Side note, are you a Criminal Minds fan?
No. I don't watch. This is very weird to say on this podcast. I don't watch TV. So I like horror.
I'm a huge Criminal Minds fan. Love Criminal Minds.
Cool.
The flashback to Spoons, hokey, but very procedural. In case you don't remember that we shot this guy, we're going to jump to it awkwardly. And then the awkward, awfully written exposition of 2 minutes, we're allowed to check back in, and watching them press the button of record and turn it off, watching the clock. I mean, Jesus, how bad is that writing? But it's so fucking brilliant because that's how those shows are written. Like, Chase is sacrificing his own gift to make a point, and it's just so fucking good. Yeah, I fucking love this episode.
You think he had like an argument with the writer of some procedural FBI show, and he was like, I could do what you do.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, you can't. You don't even know. And Chase was like, I'm going to do it for my season premiere. And then he did it. I hope that happened. I hope that happened at some celebrity party.
Well, Chase has experience with procedurals. Before The Sopranos, he wrote and maybe produced Rockford Files, which was a procedural, and even Northern Exposure, which was a network TV show. I wouldn't call it a procedural, but it had a procedure. Okay. All shows have a procedure. Every sitcom has a procedure. You know, Sopranos didn't. You never fucking knew, you know, when things were going to happen. There's no procedure to them. It was fucking great drama. That's why the show worked so well.
Daddy's going to love this episode. You've said the F word maybe 10, 15 times.
I'm sorry, Dad.
Proud of you. You're excited about season three.
Listen, season three sneaks up on me.
Yeah.
No, because when you say to me, like, what's your favorite season? I'm like, probably 2 and 4. But then I go, God, 3 is good. Yeah,
3 is good.
3 is. I'm so excited. Like, I looked ahead at, like, what we're going to be talking about. I'm like, Jesus, there's so much. I don't think I'm ever going to be bored in this season. I don't think there's one episode where I go, this is bad. Like, maybe this is the most boring episode. And I freaking love it.
I have to agree with you. I think this is, I don't think it was boring though. I feel like that's the wrong word for it. It is out of place. It's supposed to be.
It's different. It's,
yeah.
Have more symbolism, but it's not. So that's my symbolism of that idea. Then just a couple other things. Well, really, the scene that you loved. I loved how symmetrical it was, except for Patsy. There was no one across from Patsy. And that's where Spoons would be.
Oh,
and I thought that was really, really like touching and awesome. So that's my one little we see that he's missing.
Good directing.
That was great direction. Alan Coulter directed this episode, and he's one of the best Sopranos directors.
I believe in the past I said I hated. Did he do the boring episode about boredom?
I don't think that was Alan Coulter. No. Oh, maybe it was.
I feel like I said he didn't direct well, and you were like, stop it.
He hates you.
Yeah, he hates you.
Yeah, he calls you. He really does. Yeah.
Okay. What does the title mean?
Then they say it.
They say it. They said it. Do you do the thing where they go, they said it?
I did.
I'm reading the Harry Potters again.
Okay.
And I was just sitting in silence in the room, and then they said the Goblet of Fire, and I just looked up at Christian and went, they said it, and then just kept going back to reading, and he's like, okay.
Angelo Ruggiero historically was the name of, he was part of Gotti's crew for the Gambino crime family, and he was bugged by the FBI. And those bugs in his home were some of the major reasons that the Gambino crime family got busted. So
interesting. Love that.
I think that's really the name. That's the nod. But, you know, Mr. Ruggiero being the.
And then so I thought, like, obviously I thought, okay, they said it about the plumber. But also it's another nod to an old TV show.
Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers. So yeah. I just thought that was like another thing.
Who essentially, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize that the structure of that show was Mr. Rogers was playing with toys, you know, moving them around, and we were seeing them come to life as in his land of make-believe. But that's what David Chase does. He moves toys around like they're his toys, his stories. He's creating the stories for us. He's our Mr. Rogers.
How is your arm now? You good? Okay. Okay.
Are going to do. Oh, wait a minute. Is this where we're going to talk about why Richie was gay in this episode?
No, he's dead.
He's dead. Okay. No.
Dead.
He's still gay.
They put him through a sausage thing. Wait, which we didn't say in our last season, and it's been bothering me that we missed a tie to Food and Violence.
You're absolutely right.
That they got rid of his body through a sausage maker. So I just feel better now.
I'm glad you do. And I know there's a lot of people out there going, phew.
Yeah, like, I was, you know, that was really bothering me that they didn't cover that two episodes ago.
While we're on that, remember one of our best moments was when Furio was more upset about the Cadillac that he had to get rid of?
I was distracted by that. It cuts right to that, the sausage.
But Furio got a Cadillac.
I didn't notice that.
Look, good for you, Furio.
Good for you. I gotta love it.
And he polishes it. It's a great moment when Tony goes in and he's polishing because he's so proud. He got the Cadillac.
Oh, I love him. I didn't even put that together. Good for him. That's great. Most valuable Goomba.
Yeah, I'm not joking with mine. You think I am. But I'm not.
You are too.
I am not joking. I'm dead serious. The agent who I don't think we learn his name, and I don't care, who asks the maid questions about being Polish and the school, that's your most valuable Goomba in the episode.
What?
If it wasn't for him stalling the maid, they would have had to cancel the mission again. But because he thinks on his feet and talks to this woman and makes up a story about his, I don't know, his mother, his grandmother, whatever the fuck, they get the lamp bugged. I think it's great. Good for him. I hope he gets a raise. Spoiler alert, you're never going to see him again.
That's wild. I went with Agent Harris for a similar reason, but just that he's our FBI guy.
Sure. He's great. I love Agent Harris. Listen.
I do too. I like him a lot. But I think that he's our most valuable Goomba. He plans this whole thing and makes what I assume is going to carry a lot of season three with this plotline that now they're bugged. So,
you know what I like, think that's really interesting is that Tony loves Agent Harris deep down. He loves him. He loves him. Why? Loves it strong word. He likes him. He does. We saw him talking. Yeah, he likes him. I think it's great.
Well, he's my most valuable Goomba.
Listen, he's a close second for me.
But that guy.
That fucking guy goes right after he's like, wait.
My grandmother is Polish.
Right. It was brilliant. Thought on his feet. I like it.
Okay. If we pulled this shit or something that made you go, oh my God, that's us.
Tell me Tony singing, I don't want to do your dirty work. That's not dead to a T. I've seen him do it.
Singing in his car with us, without us.
Without us, with us. Dad is, if he's not talking to himself in the car, he's singing in the car. Especially when I was young.
I mean,
Dad was a big talker.
Same. I'm not alone in the car. You don't sing alone in the car.
Well, I don't sing anymore in the car since the invention of podcasts. I rarely listen to music.
Wow, you're missing it. You should just shut podcasts off. What are you doing?
Did you just tell? Hey, audience, did you hear? Shut the show off. Stop listening.
Do your dirty work. Song.
No more.
Daddy also talks to himself in the car. Remember the story where he was going to go make the deal?
I was literally going to bring this up. So, all right. So, audience, this is a great story. And our father is so mad we're going
to
tell it.
He knows one what day, we're about to say.
I was with you. Were you born?
I don't know. I feel like it's one of those stories where I think I was there, but I've heard it so many times that I literally could not have been born yet. But I feel like I was there.
You weren't, because we were getting a pool, and you weren't born yet.
Oh, it was the pool?
It was the pool. Oh, so my father and I were on our way to buy a pool, and I just, you know, I'm watching him, and he did this thing where, like, flicked his wrist a little bit, like, that's how he talked, and then all of a sudden, he puts his hand out like he's shaking someone's hand, and I'm young, and I go, Dad, did you just, like, practice the conversation with the salesman because you just shook the guy's hand? And he just basically said, shut up, because he knew I was right. But I do that more. I will talk to myself, or I'll practice conversations. You do that? I practice conversations a lot.
Oh, I don't.
I practice, I like, alternatives.
I don't think I stress about things as much as you do.
You think? You think? Miss, I come on and I record a podcast and then I just wait for my brother to edit it. Do you think
you do it. You do it. It's such a good job. Listen, there's people out there who only know me too right now. And they're thinking that, like, wow, they're making jokes about Sarah not being stressed out. And just to be clear, everybody, I'm the relaxed one in my family. That's how crazy it is. Yeah, that's how crazy it is.
You're 100% right.
Yeah.
Sleeping in college? Were you a sleeper?
Yeah. Naps.
Me too.
Yeah. Naps were great.
Big, like, connected to that. And I didn't go to college in NYC, but my best friend Jeff, who went to the same college as me, but we didn't go to college together. So a lot of times I would go visit him in New York. That noise, that was very relatable. I was like, that's like sleeping at Jeff's. Hearing the sirens as just this background noise. I thought they did a really good job with sound editing. I was like, that's exactly what New York sounds like. I thought that was really, really good.
I live in New York. I know what it sounds like. I didn't live in Manhattan, though. And in that dorm room behind Meadow on her wall, on her side of the wall, it's the No Strings Attached poster. And I thought that was great.
Did you have that?
Probably. But, like, that image of the cover of that album, No Strings Attached, is, like, iconic.
Is that the one where they look like puppets, right? They're...
You think? No strings.
No, I know, but right? That's the one, like, they all look like Pinocchio, right?
Yes. They're all okay. Little flying boys. Yes.
Is that their most famous album?
For me, because I think I was that, like, age where I, like, loved NSYNC so much.
Okay. I was a Backstreet Boys guy.
You liked Backstreet Boys?
Still do.
You had a preference? I feel like that's...
Oh, unique. Yeah.
That's unique of you.
You don't know what I listen to when. Well, now that I have children, I don't do this anymore.
You loved Millennium. You loved that album.
When I was single, living in a little apartment all by myself, that was my cleaning album. Start to finish, I could clean my apartment in the time that album went, and I vacuumed purposely during Spanish Eyes because it was the only song I didn't particularly like.
You're sick. You know this, right?
People
you know
knew
it's
that.
A really good cleaning album. Christmas time, I always do the
Jackson 5.
No, I do the thing I text you every single year, and I go, "How do I find this on Spotify?"
Oh, a Christmas Carol.
Madison Square Garden's A Christmas Carol. That's like, and then Easter time, Jesus Christ Superstar. Because you know,
What do you vacuum during? Because you got to pick a song that you're like, I don't care.
I think I like pause it or I don't. I kind of just am. It's in the background. Maybe I'll be a little more like conscious of my decisions.
I want to report back at the season finale of 3. We want to know.
So hold on a second. For A Christmas Carol, though, I can't miss one because it's the story. That's what's so great about it. So
you
can't miss.
It is what that is one of my favorite albums.
Okay.
Wow. The
All
amount
right.
of-
and we're back. Sorry. What's your write in? What's your cleaning album?
The amount of pasta and food that is in that basement where they're making fun of them. Yeah. But that was our parents' garage. We used to call it the Price Club.
Yeah.
Remember when we would leave and it would be like, go steal.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, you would steal sweet handfuls of sweet and low.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't want to buy it.
I would take boxes of pasta back to college.
Me too. Oh, yeah, sauces? Yeah. And they wouldn't know. That's
they
the
would
thing.
Never know.
They
know.
Wouldn't know.
Or but was, like they did and they don't care.
I think dad had an idea of how much was out there. But like if you go even now, crackers.
Yeah.
But things like I've never seen you eat those. Like they're ready for a storm at all times.
They're ready for guests. They're ready for their grandkids to come over.
I guess. Shower and a half, we're shivering. Frank, the head of the FBI, says in comment of the water heater, can you hear mom saying it? There better be hot water.
Yes, 1,000%.
And then my last thing is I had that exact lamp in college.
It was that era. I mean, you went to college this year.
The box, I recognized the box when they took out the box. I was like, that's the box. That's the lamp. I'm assuming it was from Bed Bath & Beyond.
I was going to say, they went to Bed Bath & Beyond and got a lamp, and you did as well later this year. Yeah.
R.I.P. Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah. 2001, you went to college.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
That's what I've been trying to say, and you weren't acknowledging it, so I said it again until you noticed. All right. Cannolis.
Not a lot.
So we got our opening, right? Our Tony going down to get the newspaper in his bathrobe, which is great. It's like, we're home. That's so nice. And he zooms in on Violence Feared. I just feel like it's a cannoli for the season. Just kind of buckle up, get ready. Violence is coming.
Oh, this show has violence in it?
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed, but there's some violence.
I think you're spoiling, and I think that's wrong. Just say.
Okay.
Just say. Believe it or not, okay, so I'll spoil even more, giving like a little preview of what is one of the greatest seasons. This is around the time that David Chase was getting a lot of criticism about like the show wasn't having enough violence. Like people wanted people whacked all the time to the point where as good as season 2 was, people were like, all right, so we had to wait so long for Richie and Pussy. Like, people should die every episode. And Chase was like, if I kill someone every episode, we won't have characters. Like, you can't just kill people all the time.
Also, and, like, they'll get caught by the police if people just keep disappearing. Like,
But Chase in this season does create what's called the Trinity of Violence, which is three episodes that are so brutally violent. And when we get to them, like, I don't think we're going to be laughing a lot about some of the things.
That's a very good point. They will not be fun.
No. There's three episodes
in a row. Enjoy it now, everybody.
That are amazing. Don't get me wrong. Three amazing episodes, but they're like, whoa, episodes. So he did that as a response to the audience. Like, fine, fuck off. You want this? But then the audience was like, all right. They criticize him. They're like, back off. Like, you were like, you went too far. Like, you can't make an audience happy. I just have a few. Tony almost getting shot as episode one of this season. Tony inviting Patsy to bring his son to swim with AJ. Both funny for obvious reasons, but also a little foreshadowing there. Hunter knowing what a medication does. So it was very interesting. And I've got a Russian girl coming to take care of my mother.
All right, Joseph, anything else?
Yeah. This is Angel Lipari's last episode.
Yeah, not gonna miss him.
I know, but I thought he deserved like a better goodbye, like a death. Like, I'd rather kill him.
No, but his character dies with pussy. Lipari is symbolically at the bottom of the bay.
And Harris did it.
And there you go. Meadow's roommate. I know that it's very sad that she has a drinking problem, but she's one of the most annoying humans I think I've ever experienced.
So we got rid of Lipari and we introduce.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Okay. I'm going to defend Caitlin, though. You're going to tell me you didn't know a Caitlin in college?
No, of course. Come on. Of course. I think
that actress does a great job. Of playing that character.
Sure.
That's also a very, like, her in her underwear, which I don't think is necessarily, like, meant to be attractive, is a pretty famous meme.
Really?
Like, yeah. And I, like, yeah, it really bothers me. I don't like it.
Okay.
I think it's a very typical stupid thing a college girl would do, which was drunk at 11 a.m., but I just was kind
of
like...
Yeah, in front of your roommate? Yeah, she's in front of your roommate. She's going to take a nap. I don't think that's weird. That's not why she's annoying.
No.
I'll say that.
Patsy saying that the mink shouldn't have torn. What a great joke. Because you have to remember the fact that Tony and Carmela had sex in the mink.
Yes.
And then
yes. It's great.
Exactly. And he even says, like, it shouldn't have torn. Like, I had, it's really strong. And Tony's face is kind of like, well.
Yeah,
it is. I thought that was great.
That's cute. Okay, so back to Lipari. We're giving him a good send-off here. He's a lefty. And usually I would say that's a sign of brilliance. But.
I can't. Because.
I'm a lefty.
And as is my son.
Adam's lefty.
And you share a birthday. I think that's why you cursed him with being left-handed. I love how Chase just uses these little details. Like, he never makes anything just whatever. Particularly in this episode, the fact that the man and the woman that are working on the lamp are clearly having sex. And I get the feeling it's like this inner office secret romance. Just the way she was hovering over him. Like, it was just... They had three lines, and yet there was so much to those characters. Like, they're clearly having an inner office affair.
What are you talking about?
I'm right.
Okay.
I know I'm right. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Does the water heater, I know they said it was 120 gallons. Does it really fill up the basement that much like that?
Let me tell you something. Every time I go to my basement, because of this episode, I look for brown water. Because it terrifies me
that's
what happens. I don't know. I don't
make sure your
so.
Pictures are off the ground.
I would never put pictures in the basement. Well, do you have help still? I have just a couple. Everything's digital. I don't have albums.
Yeah, I guess I don't really have pictures.
Have you ever had your basement flood?
Recently.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
It wasn't that bad, though. It was fine.
No, I had my basement, but again, it wasn't that bad. But listen, it's enough that it's a pain in the ass. Like, I needed a shock vac.
Oh, yeah, we did too. But yeah. he, I just feel like they waded through the water.
And where did it go so fast?
Yeah, just, I felt like it was a lot of water. Ooh. Also, is this symbolic of like pussy sleeping with the fishes in the last episode?
Or the pool is now in the house.
Oh, his family is literally in the pool.
Would you have not shit if a duck waddled by? Wow. While he's like, get the pictures.
Oh my God. I would love if like a toy duck or something though. I would really be into that.
I would have too. I don't know if this is true, and I searched. I did IMDb, I did fan sites, everything. But this has to be the least amount of screen time James Gandolfini has in an episode. Right?
Yeah.
He has very little. Again, which has sparked my idea of like, just do an episode without him. Or where we only see him from afar. It would have been awesome.
Whoa.
He definitely has the least lines. There is no way. I can't think of one episode that he's in less. And I'm, you know what? It's funny because I know there is an episode people are thinking about right now, and it's not true. Okay. He talks more. Ladies and gentlemen, the episode you're thinking of, he talks more in that episode than you think he does.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, that episode is in season 3. And I'm so fucking excited to talk about that one too.
Oh, exciting. Okay, good. So it's soon. We'll cover it. You were really wrong. Eric Scatino does not go to Rutgers. He goes to Montclair State.
Okay.
And is doing a bunch of acid.
Kiss my ass. I can't get everything right all the time.
You just say things so confidently.
I was confident on that one.
You were like, yeah. Also, Jeannie Cusimano is just like a weirdo. She's so weird.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. That was my thought.
Did you notice, this is more of a blooper, did you notice that the headline on the paper was like way too small and had all this white space? Like newspapers purposely don't have white space.
No, I think it was drawing our eye to the violence is feared.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Okay.
And then my last thing I'll throw out is there's no therapy. No Melfi.
Yeah, she was missed.
Yeah. It's just weird. But again,
wasn't about she'll Tony. And
she'll be in the next episode.
Sure. But like, it wasn't about Tony, I guess. So the FBI is not going to, the FBI doesn't know about Melfi, does she? Do they?
I bet they do.
Right? Because they watch.
I mean, the whole mob knows.
But they don't know it's her.
No, I bet they don't know it's her.
But the FBI can't figure out that aren't they kind of watching him all the time? They don't see him walk into her office?
I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's a scene in this season. Oh, well, no, they said, they already said they've been bugging his phones for 4 years. So at some point,
yeah,
he must have called her to make an appointment, to cancel an appointment. I'm sure.
Melfi calls during college and talks to Carmela on the phone.
There you go. So, yeah, they know.
Okay. I just love the ending shot on the lamp. And that just ties into the whole procedural episode of all of this. It's just like a typical ending. But I love the zoom into the lamp. I thought that was just a good ending. It made me excited for the season.
I'm so excited for the season. So excited.
All right. Thanks to our listeners for analyzing season 3, episode 1, Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood. I don't know why I can't say
Mr. Ruggiero's Neighborhood.
I don't know why.
Good luck saying the. Good luck
with
your next part.
I think I'm
going
to have a better time with this. That's all from us for now. Talk to you soon when we discuss the next episode. Proshai Lubushka. Livy. Is that what it says?
I don't know. I'll have to listen to when it's said in the episode.
No, Proshai Lubushka.
Sure.
Proshai Lubushka.
There it is. And we are going to have a special guest in that episode, one of my longtime friends. We've known each other since I was in 9th grade. She was in 7th grade. Mrs. Jessica Berger Vitallo will be coming in to talk to us about episode 2, season 3.
Borsha Lavushka. This has been The Sibling Sit Down. Thanks for listening to The Sibling Sit Down. Please remember to like or follow the show on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. So you never forget about it.